I've enjoyed playing here. This has been over 20 years that I've been coming to Royal Melbourne. This way golf should be played.
We love coming down under.
Look, it's phenomenal to play. The quality of the golf's been great, but the enthusiasm of the people has been the thing that's just been amazing.
Tier of courses that I'm willing to shave my neck for in Kingston Heath and Victoria. Get me out of bed to shave.
Especially somewhere like Australia in the Sand Belt, and I have so many great memories of being down there.
Hello, friends. What better way to start Masters look ahead time than with Jim Nance's customary intro to the Masters? Hello, friends, and hello, Matt Mollica. How are you?
Well, thanks, Scott. Not many fingernails left, and blood pressure's a little bit higher than it normally is. I have to board a plane tomorrow morning, so I'll be up in the sky by the time this is published, I imagine, on the way to cash in the ballot ticket for the Wednesday practice round at Augusta.
Amazing. I started getting Facebook memories from 2 years ago today when my trip started. Took a long road from North Carolina to the Masters, and I recall the excitement well. So I'm, as I said to you this morning on text, I'm insanely jealous, and that's another way of saying how happy I am for you, but mostly jealous.
I remember when you took that trip.
Time does fly. But hopefully you can have time, run slowly and stand still for the next couple of weeks and enjoy yourself on what is going to be an incredible trip. Before you get out of here, though, now we've locked you in for a report from the grounds next Wednesday night after you go and spectate the practice round. Well, no, not next Wednesday night, the Wednesday night after. Before that, though, we're throwing out some listener questions. Got a good batch, even though we only threw that out at 9 o'clock last night, and it's the following afternoon at 4. So we're going to rip through some of those, Matty.
Yeah.
Send you out with a listener questions episode.
Yeah, thank you to everyone who's responded quickly to that call. It is excellent to look back through the DMs and just see all of those different questions and topics that people raise and things that really interest all of you out there in the listenership. So looking forward to sinking the teeth into some of them.
Right, let's do it. Boys, big fan of the pod. This is from Fraser Lauder. Moved last year from Scotland to Melbourne. Any recommendations for public courses around Victoria you'd recommend or would have time or that would have time on weekends?
Great question to start, Fraser. I remember thinking when I was between clubs about 15 years ago, I'd finished up at one golf club and was waiting for membership to commence at another, that I would be at a loose end for a reasonably finite period of time and was panicking a tiny bit at first, but then got my head together and realised that every single weekend for probably 35 to 40 weekends, I wouldn't be driving all that far from home and be seeing a great range of courses and a great wealth of courses throughout. I suppose if you include the Bellarine and Mornington Peninsulas within that metropolitan area, I wasn't venturing very far outside of those, but really playing some good golf on a weekly basis. The stacks down on that Geelong area, as we've spoken about plenty of times before, with Lonsdale Links, Kerr Lewis, two courses at 13th Beach, even Anglesey if you want to go a step further. Scott and I have both been chatting to a mate recently who's been extolling the virtues of the Swan Island course at Queenscliff as a bit of a hidden gem. So there's plenty of courses down that way to go and visit. Even greater depth of courses down on the Mornington Peninsula with tee times everywhere from Flinders, Portsea, the Dunes, two at Moona Links, St Andrews Beach, Rosebud Country Club, public course at Rosebud, points in between there if you want to go to Eagle Ridge or even the little course at the Dunes as well. Moving closer, I suppose Sandy Links is the metropolitan standout with public access on the Sandbelt. There's Sandy Jemison at Oakley. There's also Matt Griffin's old stomping ground at Cheltenham for 9-hole offerings in the Sandbelt. If you were to head north of the city, you could go to Growling Frog. You can go even up to Kilmore, which is from metropolitan Melbourne, probably a slightly shorter drive than you're taking to get to the Mornington Peninsula. Thompson Wolveridge Perrott's last real course that they did as a triumvirate was Beveridge or Mandalay Bay, which is something different. You'd want to be a little bit picky when you visited there. You wouldn't want to go in the depths of winter, but in dry months, that would be worth a visit as well. So there's heaps and heaps of compass points, even Yarrambat out in the northeast of Melbourne. I used to go there 25+ years ago before I was ever a member of a golf club. Really, really early Tony Cashmore design, accessible course in terms of tee times. and a pretty typical sort of semi-rural Australian feel in terms of vegetation, but also kangaroos on the course from time to time. So there's heaps of options there for you, Fraser, depending on where you live, how far you want to drive, how much you want to spend. But you could literally book in almost every weekend in the calendar year for 18 holes. And you won't be venturing as far afield as any more than 2 hours in your car, really. So plenty on offer. There's stay and play packages that he could avail himself of as well. So you can do that at Bowen Heads, admittedly midweek. And you could also do that as a Victorian resident at Victoria Golf Club. You could do that.
Yeah, that's probably a different proposition, though. That a cheerful weekend green fee versus a mortgage payment. Yeah, not quite a mortgage payment, but... Now, did you mention, I'm not sure if I missed it in that, did you mention Royal Burnley?
I didn't because of the works going on there at the moment. But when the Crafton Mogford redo is complete, that's another option for you, which is really, really central. And it looks like it's going to be different and hopefully it's going to be good fun.
And of course, we've got some friends just down the road.
Yeah. So we've talked about that back-to-back event, and we really should aim to try and do something at some stage this year in terms of an event for podcast listeners where we play the newly unveiled Burnley and then we just venture down the road for a sip and a meal afterwards. Yeah, Crafter and Mogford are redoing some of the stuff at Royal Burnley, and we were chatting off air just before we hit record about the motivation for that, and it's really cool to see that City of Yarra is doing that to a municipal facility. They're putting money into that project and probably not just doing it for the sake of safety and liability with it sitting so perilously close to the Monash Freeway. I think they look like they're actually trying to improve the golf course and the environs as well, which is to be commended. Perhaps they've taken a lead from the guys at Sandy Links, and they see that some investment and some good design can lead to a great facility for local residents and a profitable facility. So we probably should get off our butts and do something in terms of an event there at some stage in the weeks and months after it opens. We might even do it on a Saturday, given that the guys at Burnley Brewing are offering tours of the brewery from 3 p.m. on a Saturday. No bookings needed to go and do that at Burnley Brewing in Bridge Road, Richmond. It is a $10 fee, but you get 10% off any takeaway orders once you've done it. So if you're at a loose end on a Saturday afternoon, don't want to go to the footy, or if you haven't got a tea time booked for a Saturday afternoon, that would be a good way to spend a weekend afternoon, I reckon, Scott. And a good way to support those who support us.
Yes. Yes, yes. Or if you go to the footy on Saturday night, a good way to lead into it. Now, next question is from Daniel Real. Daniel asked us, what are your favourite UK courses, excluding Open Road or World Top 100? Interested to hear any off-the-beaten track or must-play public / easy accessible courses over there. Love this question. These sorts of courses are very near and dear to my heart. And basically, pick any Open Road or course or World Top 100 in Scotland and dot it around it. There'll be two or three, maybe more courses that, for my money, can be as much fun, more fun, much better bang for buck to play. Royal Dornoch's a good example. Dornoch gets all the headlines, but Brora, Golspie, Tain, and Fort Rose and Rosemarkie up in that neck of the woods are fantastic fun, particularly Brora, and I've got a real soft spot for Golspie. It's kind of half heath, half links, really, really cool place and a really cheap and cheerful club. Yeah, in St Andrews, gosh, that coastline is full of them from the nine hole at Anstruther. Ely's probably more of your top 100 high end, but we played, so there's London Links and then there's Leven. London Links gets a lot of love. Leven's kind of the have not wrong side of the tracks course. And of course, London and Leven back in the day were an 18 hole out and back links, and they ended up splitting the course in half and building 9 extra holes inland for each course. Leven's the one people forget about, and on a trip years ago where I played the old and Ely, Leven might be the course that has hung in my head the most. It was superb. So basically anywhere you're going to go, this is why I hate it when people do these Scotland trips and try and hit every region of Scotland. Go to one place. Yes, absolutely play the headline courses because they're super fun and they're as famous and revered as they are for a reason. But spend time, get to know the area, play different courses. You know, you go to East Lothian and you've got Muirfield and you've got North Berwick, but then you've also got you know, the number two and number three courses at Gullen, you've got Dunbar, you've got three or four or five more courses through there that don't need to cost you a bomb, but great fun to play. So anywhere you go in Scotland or in the UK, really, for that matter, there's going to be those lesser ones around. Anyone who's in London, it's a little bit of a harder chase there. I'm a big fan of Leatherhead, which is very much off the beaten path. I don't mind Mitcham. Mitcham's a muni, I guess, like a council course. Really super good fun. Anywhere you go, just there's a bit of research and you'll find some really cool stuff.
I knew that was right in your wheelhouse.
I could do an episode just listing these courses. That would be Australian golf passport, but yeah, love it.
Yeah, that's a lot to be said for sort of more humble off-Broadway courses that sit on some amazing land as well. Like beautiful walks and spectacularly beautiful at times.
Mm. Well, even so, No Lay Up guys have been in Scotland this week and a couple of them are in St Andrews, and I saw some Insta stories today of them playing the Jubilee course. Now, I've never played the Jubilee in St Andrews, and it just looks sensational and sporty and fun. You know, there's when you stop trying to be a championship course, you know, in all of the things that sit inside those inverted commas, there's a lot of stuff that you can do and holes that you can get away with and landforms you can use in funky ways. You know, greens you can build on a 270-yard par four that you couldn't build on another type of hole. Yeah, it's not just, they're not lesser courses. They are just a very different spirit of golf than your Open Championship ones. Now, Luke Iper, we've got a few, you know, we hinted in the video calling for questions that, you know, you were heading off to the Masters tomorrow, which led to some Masters themed questions. One's from Luke Iper. He says, I'm thinking about the hilly nature of Augusta. If it were built over more moderate terrain like Royal Queensland or Metropolitan, would it still be in the world top 30? What do you reckon, Matty?
I'm going to say no. There's so much that's really, really good about Augusta from a design perspective, and it's not just the Masters and the club's exclusivity that sees the course sit so high in ranking panels, views of the world top 10, world top 50. Green complexes with green contours, but that routing. And I think that the way in which that site is walkable, it's not the world's easiest walk by any stretch, but how you get so many good holes on what really is a somewhat severe site and not a site that we would think of as ideal if you had your blank canvas and wanted to lay out 18 holes. I think part of its beauty and part of its attraction is the fact that it does what it does on such unhelpful terrain.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, there's a reason we talked about it in the last episode, the four-word course reviews about Metropolitan being mid-teens ranked in Australia and that really being its ceiling because of the limitations of the property. So I think Augusta National is not built on a perfect site for golf, but I'd still take it over a perfectly flat piece of ground. I also think that in terms of practicalities, Augusta National's built on clay. If it weren't so steep, it wouldn't drain so efficiently. It wouldn't be able to probably stay reasonably firm and dry at times. You know, flat ground when it's sand, great, fine. Flat ground when it's clay, you know, is likely to end up pretty marshy a lot of the time. So that's, you know, another kind of benefit, I guess, of it being on the slopes that it's on. I don't know. I mean, Merion is probably the flattest heavy soil great course I could think of. It's still probably around top 30 in the world. So, I mean, the one thing that I think of is you would never bet against Alistair McKenzie missing the mark on something like that. You know, if he was given Augusta National and it was flat, he probably would have just designed a completely different golf course. So it's hard to say if it were. It's almost like when people say if the fifth at New South wasn't on the ocean, it would be X. But the reality is that it is on the ocean, and that's why it is the hole it is. I guess the reality is Augusta National is on that steep property, and that's why it is what it is.
The other thing that that site does is imbue that course with such an edge on so many others in terms of being able to differentiate between good swingers and great shot makers. You've got uphill stance, side hill stance, downhill lies, ball above your feet requiring a fade into a green. Without noticing it sometimes, I think they're the things that we marvel at when we see great players hit tremendous shots at the Masters. That shot of Faldo's on the second shot into 13 in the 1996 Masters in the final round is just a poster child for that in terms of needing a particular shot shape and having such an unhelpful stance or a severe stance with the ball so far above his feet and not wanting to turn it over. And you just don't end up with a course that asks those sorts of questions when it's pancake flat.
Yeah. You just reminded me, I'm going to pop in the show notes a link to the podcast series that Jeff Ogilvie did with Andy Johnson on the Fried Egg. It must be 6 or 7 years ago now. And it's every hole, how to play every hole at Augusta National. And he talks really thoroughly on that aspect of you're constantly asked to hit draws off fade lies. You're constantly asked to hit it high off a downhill lie. You're constantly asked to hit it low off an uphill lie. It's not the 101 challenge of golf. It's like the 701 Masters PhD level exam. So, yeah, I'll link to that because I always enjoy just refreshing that before every Masters. And I think our listeners enjoy that too. Now, of course, we do what we do in conjunction with Angus and Grace Go Golfing. We love Angus and Grace and we love Matty Burns. And you know what else I love as a 41-year-old father of two, proud owner of one dad bod, is the way that the three-button pocket polo gives my arms a bit of a squeeze, gives my pecs a bit of love, but then just glosses over the midsection when I wear it. It's not a shirt that clings to your gut. It's a shirt that accentuates the things that you might still have some semblance of your youth, you know, up top without drawing attention to, you know, the extra party pies, the extra beers, the extra chockies after Easter that the kids have left lying around. So love those clothes because Matt has crafted them and tailored them to work for people who are not professional athletes, you know, who are not in absolutely Olympic form. So I think our listeners, if they haven't tried Angus and Grace, would really love all of the Angus and Grace collection. But for me particularly, the three-button pocket polo has been a real winner. Got it in blue, got it in white. Got it in a beige. I'm sure the beige has a more artistic name than beige, but you get the idea. AngusandGraceGoGolfing.com, Instagram, and at William Street Paddington.
Now, you mentioned forward course reviews in there, and we got a massive catalogue of them from Jaeger Kovic. He's got some good ones in there.
Yeah, so Jaeger, for those who don't know, is an American golf course architect. He's a former associate of Gil Hance, who's now working for himself. Working on some really awesome golden age courses in the northeast of the USA.
So Jaeger was here recently, came out for Nick Mills' wedding in February.
Also Jaeger's for Lily Callow's wedding. Let's not just call it Nick Mills' wedding.
Sorry, actually, yeah, we should probably refer to it as Lily's because she's been a guest, whereas Nick has
She's been on the pod and Nick hasn't. Yeah, came here for Lily's wedding.
Yeah. So Jaeger's firm is Proper Golf, for those who are interested in looking at some of the stuff that he's doing. Some really cool work. So he visited lots and lots of good courses, played many and studied many while he was here. He had a few forward course reviews for Royal Melbourne West, Width and Angles Poster Child, Thinking About It Daily, Get on the Plane. Royal Melbourne East confirms composite is sensational, Main Paddock Holes Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Woodlands, not quite as flattering, Play the Front Twice.
I was surprised by that because I quite liked the two par fives on the back. I want to say it's 15 and 18.
Yeah, I like 15 as well, and I don't mind 18 either. I think it's reachable, and if you're one down and you're going down the last, you think I'm in this.
And I like, so, is it 11 that's the little 11 that's the little short par four that goes a little bit right?
13,
sorry. Yeah, I mean, hell, there's some good holes on the back, but yeah, the front's, you know, playing three and four twice is not going to suck.
True. St. Andrews Beach, public golf take note, mm-hmm. the definition of minimalism. He also yeah. visited Gunnamatta, National Gunnamatta, lots of indirect lines, tame greens for Schneider, unfirm fescue approaches.
I noted the tame greens for Schneider comment. I was having this conversation at New South Wales. Obviously, we famously went away from Schneider and Doak for McKenzie and Ebert, and we were kind of discussing last weekend that, you know, the implications of that change and the fact that even tame Renaissance greens, tame Schneider greens, tame Doak greens, they're still pretty wild greens, even if it's tame for them.
Yeah. There's plenty of movement. You go through 3, 4, 5, 6 on Gunnamatta, and there's a putt on each of those holes that either traverses a significant slope or moves a long way left to right or right to left.
Yeah, I mean, the Castle and Moat, obviously, on 7. You've got the par 3, 11th, which you would think, you know, the whole of that length would be the dominating factor, but that green is like on a cliff's edge. You've got a half pipe there at 12. Etc. There's some pretty hectic greens, given that they are restrained for Schneider.
Yeah. So I liked those ones.
Yeah.
Victoria, I need another crack. So he has to get back there and have a look at it.
Which leads into his next one, which was his theory that it is
good, not sure, great.
Hmm. But he knows enough to know. Do you know what I like about the more people know, the less they snap to firm views on things? You know, a lot of people would play something once and say, you know, I've got a strong view that it's X. But Jaeger's like, I think I need another go. Not sure it's great. But I'm not going to just say it's not great. I want to see it again or a few more times before I form a strong view.
Yeah, which given what he knows and the field in which he works and how much he's seen, he'd be entitled to make a more definitive judgment, wouldn't he?
I mean, it's brave of him to disrespect the Bride's golf course, but, you know.
We'll finish with Kingston Heath. He's done others for Tarity and TRI and one or two others, but we'll finish with the Kingston Heath forward course reviews from Jaeger. Nails all the details. Simple, elegant, brilliant evolution. Best club course combo would play here every day.
Yeah, it's what people always say about the Heath, isn't it? You know, even if they concede that RM West is a better golf course, there's a lot of people say, but if I was going to join one, I'd join Kingston Heath.
Yeah, it holds a place in so many people's hearts for exactly that reason. Furrows, he wrote, harder than the cradle.
I thought he might have said for Kingston Heath, must try Subtly Buster.
That'd be, yep. Someone had to work that into one. Yeah.
Yeah. No. So that was good fun. Thank you, Jaeger, for sharing those.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Back onto our questions. I might just punch through the Masters ones all in one go. All the Augusta ones. So Vic Bitter 88 asked us, discounting Augusta, but presuming every other course is attainable, West Coast US or East Coast US trip? I don't even think this is close. I think you could put the whole of the West Coast against 2 hours from New York City, and I would choose 2 hours from New York City. If you're giving me the whole East Coast, I don't even need thinking music.
Yeah, it seemed like a bit of an unfair fight because Long Island probably beats the whole West Coast.
I mean, the West Coast, you've got the five courses at Bandon. You've got Cypress Point, you've got Pebble Beach, you've got Paso Tiempo, you've got Olympic Club, Cal Club, San Francisco Golf Club, you've got the Valley Club, you've got Riv and LA, Wilshire, obviously, you've got Bel Air.
The Tour Monterey Peninsula Country Club.
Tour Monterey, overlooked that. Torrey Pines, for those who like that kind of thing. There's not. I mean, the West Coast puts up a pretty good shot, but, yeah, I think the East Coast is just, you know, that was where US golf was born. You've got Boston, New York, and Philly that all have massive, massive lineups. You've got the Pinehurst area. You've got, you know, even like Aiken now in, I don't know if you'd count, I mean, it's only 3 hours from Charleston, so I'd say it's East Coast, but you've got, even just in Aiken, you've got Palmetto, you've got Tree Farm, Old Barnwell, Sage Valley. Aiken Golf Club is, you know, it's not great, but it's super fun little local course. You know, 20 minutes away over the river, you've got this course called Augusta National and Augusta Country Club. Like, it's even Aiken, which is little old Aiken, you know, has got some that you would include on that. So I think East Coast for me, yeah, in a landslide.
Yeah, and you haven't even included any Florida courses there either, which some people will be drawn to more than others.
Seminole, Sawgrass, yeah. Alan Ritchie asks us, Aussie version of best hole on the worst land and worst hole on the best land. So let's start with best hole on the worst land, Matty. And my candidate is 3 at Kingston Heath.
I had a small field of finalists and that was well and truly in it.
When you look at the fact that all the other candidates for the best short 4 in the country, it's the land that's one of the leading reasons, and that thing's dead flat, and it's just the design.
Yeah, they've made an awful lot out of not much. It's probably 2 small Aussie rules fields, one after the other. There's no great movement. Just a brilliant green complex. A little bit of a sucker play on the tee for so many. People stare straight ahead and see that green straight ahead in the distance and a flag waving in the distance and under 300 metres away and just make a beeline for it and end up in a world of trouble. Thoughtfully placed bunker on that left side. And still, no matter how many times you do it, you have 5 iron in hand and think, oh, look, I'll just hit something to the left side and I'll have pitching wedge straight up the length of the green and great visibility from over there. But you just still feel like it's not quite right when you're making that play from the tee. So, yeah, really, really cool hole. No surprise that that's in the final. I had 10 Kingston Heath in there as well. Soccer pitch, not much in terms of topography, not much in terms of area, and a really, really cool, almost iconic hole. A tiny little lobe at the front of the green, pinched in by all the bunkers. I thought that was worth a mention in this sort of discussion. 4 at Woodlands always get the run in this sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And its southern cousin, the 3rd at Curlewis. Good land, but not great. And they've just made, there's a hole there that is just such a tempting, interesting, fun, reachable par 4 that, the quality of that hole belies the soil and the little plot on which it sits. Just such a cool hole.
So what's your worst hole on the best land in Australia?
I struggled with this one a little more. I feel like I had 2 or 3 of these burned into my mind a while ago and I'd just be angst-ridden thinking about why this hole wasn't this way or that way. And I must have purged them from my mind just to rid myself of some frustration at some point. I don't know what these holes were. I keep thinking that the short par 4 15th at Moona Links Legends is a terrible hole. And it feels like there should be a better hole there, even though it's not a site that is of, it's not topography of great architectural quality or merit. But I think that's a dog of a hole amongst some really good holes down on that 36 hole complex. And it should be much better.
Yeah, right. I'll give you 8 at Barnburgle Dunes.
I find myself gravitating to 16 at Barnburgle if I try and remodel a hole on that layout.
Yep. That's an honourable mention. I'm not sure it's on as good land as 8, though. Like that kind of aggressive drop shot. You know, it's not bad land. It's good links land. It should be a better hole for the land it's on. Like a less good version of 5.
Yeah.
So what this did make me think about too is the flat ground issue. So you look at people talk about the back paddock of RM West being not good golf. And for me, like the comparable 4 holes at Kingston Heath is 2, 3, 4, 5. And I think that kind of spells out how challenging good golf on flat ground can be.
Yeah, you really, as a designer, you really need to delve into your bag of tricks to make something out of nothing or have some sort of strategy in your playbook to ensure that you can gobble up the less inspiring land on a plot while you're routing 18 and still have a hole that holds its head up in polite society, as Dillinghast and Clates would say. So I'm not sure too many people are saying that about the back 4 at West, are they? on that other paddock.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about it being the letdown, I guess, of West.
Crowd. Okay. Could be the best long par three in the country in that four-hole stretch.
Mm.
And one of the best Foss front greens.
Yeah, no, great. Moving on, Jamie Woolley wants to know, after visiting Tassie, out of Royal Hobart and Tasmania, which would you pick to be a member at and the advantages and disadvantages of both? So I would say,
ideal to answer this, yeah.
Yeah, I went pretty deep on this in our episode number 17, which I went down to Hobart for a mate's 40th and played them both and went through in detail. But to save you, I mean, it's a bit of a cop-out to say, go and listen to this other podcast. I would say, okay, out of Royal Hobart and Tassie, which I picked to be a member at, I would say I'd pick Royal Hobart. It just felt a bit more like a nice city golf club. I don't want to sound like a wanker. Like, it was a bit more comfortable up in the clubhouse, just had a bit more of kind of a belonging feel for me rather than a Tassie golf club. Was lovely and rustic, but kind of felt a little bit like people pass through rather than people belong. And that's going to be a shit take because I went to both of them once. And I know Tassie members are going to think that sounds stupid, but that was my initial impression. And it might have been that I was hosted at Royal Hobart. And when I spent time in the clubhouse at Tassie, it was before the round and I was on my own. So maybe that plays a part too. But I liked the golf course at Royal Hobart probably better. And listeners to that episode 17 will remember that I had 23 points at Tassie and went one under par for, I think, 40 points at Royal Hobart. So that's going to colour it too. But it was just a more, I felt like it was in a bit better condition, which probably helps when the courses are of comparable quality. The severe moments at Tasmania, some of them I thought didn't necessarily work that well. It was a lot. You know, they've changed the hole numbers. There was a par three that I think was 8 when I was there, and it's a lot of golf shot, you know, for what it asks. You know, we talked about in that episode that probably if you looked at the 36 holes and tried to order them, the best 6 and the worst 6 are at Tasmania. So it's kind of high highs and low lows. I probably felt like Royal Hobart was just a bit more of a consistent, interesting, strategic, not over the top sort of golf course.
That's a good answer. That'll give him everything he needs to know.
This could be our final one. I'll check. There might be one more in DMs, but Charlie Rann asked, best golf trip match formats for Barnboogle trip.
Yeah,
I like formats that take a card and pencil out of your pocket, but keen to hear what you think.
I liked this question. I sort of found myself harking back to going there last November with a group of 7 others, some who I knew, some didn't know so well. I think it depends in part on how many of you there are. And one novel format, which I don't think I would have mentioned in that Barnboogle Revisited pod that I did on return from that trip. If there's 3 or 4 of you, so all of the guys on the trip are in, all the golfers on the trip are in one group. I haven't done it lots, but I've always found it really fun to play an Ambrose as a group and try and just go as super low as you can as one team. Can we get into the 50s? Let's do this as a team. Yeah, just a huge builder of camaraderie. And you could potentially do that on the first day to build some spirit and get things started on a positive note amongst guys and girls who may not know one another or may not have been away on a trip with one another before. If there's a big range of skills, 1 or 2 of you are a bit rusty, that format just gives you plenty of freedom. You spray a drive and you think, cool, there's 3 others who are just going to take this tee shot as well. You can pick up, you can move on, you don't beat yourself up. You're hitting literally every shot. I reckon that's a great novel format that I haven't heard too many other people speak about.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. It's kind of it's a soul brother to my one, which is whoever can make the most net birdies or net eagles, 3-pointers, 4-pointers in Stableford language. Just something that gets you, yeah, hitting interesting, fun, risky shots, because that's what, to me, that's all about.
Yeah.
You can keep a comp score 52 weeks of the year and you can do all that. I think Barney gives you an opportunity to play a style of golf and a psychology of golf that you can't play other places, so you might as well embrace it. And that way you make a nine, it doesn't ruin your day. You go down there to have fun and have a laugh and talk about shots post-round. You know, you don't want to go there and be rocking the fetal position because you had 19 Stableford points. Because the 19 Stableford points might well have 5 3-pointers in it.
Yeah.
You probably need to finish packing and do some more daydreaming before you hop on a plane in the morning. But I appreciate you making time on the eve of your departure.
I'm going to spend some time with the family and see them before I'm away for 2 weeks. I finished packing approximately 72 hours ago. So I'll have a dinner with the fam before I go and make sure that they've got some little plans and some dead time in the bank before the plane takes off. So great to chew the fat with you and discuss all of these, Scott. And I look forward to putting some pictures up online and talking with you while I'm overseas. We'll definitely do an Aussies experience at Augusta, perhaps a short one from over there. Mm-hmm. While the emotions are still raw, having walked around the site. Plenty of other Australians who are making the trip over there, either in media or for the practice days or the tournament themselves, have spoken to one or two who were lucky enough to be on the grounds at some point between Thursday morning and Sunday afternoon. So,
yeah, it's cool. I mean, this is the tournament that you talk to people about when they're going there and they're giddy like a kid at Christmas. Shane Bacon had a great take this week about how children are always living in this, you know, what's next, like looking forward to whatever's next. If I'm going to finish my dinner, I'm going to get dessert, or I'm going to do my chores this week and I'm going to get the toy dad told me I can have. Or, you know, it's always looking forward to something exciting. And you don't often get that as an adult. And even when you do, it's stuff that you look at methodically and you are an adult about it. The Masters is the one thing that I found in my group and my networks that makes you giddy like a child before Christmas. And I just love it for everyone who's going to get to experience that, whether it's their first time, their second time like you, or, you know, there's a guy at my golf club that takes tour groups every year and he still seems giddy about it when he talks about going. So that's what's so special about the Masters, and we can't wait for it to roll around again.
Exactly. We'll be right back.